Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here and for the organizers to put this together. So the topic is a minimalist approach to the physics of emergence. The talk will mainly be based on the first two papers, but I will also briefly mention the second two papers. These papers were done with these wonderful collaborators. They are all at PI, or used to be at PI. One of them was at PI, left, and then came back to PI. Okay. There's only one take-home message I want to give. This is what I call anomaly supremacy. Namely, anomaly is something super universal, and we can use anomaly to as a systematic framework to understand all possible, the landscape of all possible universality classes in a quantum matter. Besides the take-home message, along the way, I will also introduce some concepts that I think are interesting. One of them is what we call entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking orders. The other is non-Lagrangian quantum criticality. Okay, let's get started. By the way, if you have any questions during the talk, please just ask. So we know that one of the central themes in the study of, one of the central themes in the study of quantum matter is the emergence of universality classes. Say we may have some many-body system, which is described by a lot of microscopic properties, but if we zoom out and only focus on the large scale and the low energy properties of the system, we see different systems can be organized into universality class. Each universality class consists of many different systems. They will have different microscopic details, but they share the same large-scale universal behavior. Usually, the universality class can be described by a quantum field theory. So in this talk, I will use these two terminologies interchangeably. Let's look at a simple common example. Suppose the universality class is a Fermi liquid, then we know it's characterized by its intrinsic data, including the Fermi velocity, nanoparameters, and so on. We can also ask in which many body systems it can emerge. Of course, we know in many systems it can emerge. It may emerge in gold, or in mercury, or in this cold atom gas, or many other possibilities. We know that these systems are all very different microscopically, but they all share the same universal physics as Fermi liquid at low energies. So this is one example of the emergence of a universality class. And of course, we want to ask whether there are some maybe more interesting or more exotic universality classes. Depending on your perspective, different people think different things are interesting. I want to talk about two particular concepts that I think are interesting. Entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking orders. I will argue there are some, actually they are defined to be some intrinsically entangled symmetry breaking orders. And then it's the more, even more complicated non-Lagrangian quantum criticality. Let's start from the first one. Let's just review the basic concept of spontaneous symmetry breaking. Consider some spin one half system on a lattice with SO3 spin rotational symmetry and a lattice translation symmetry. Now let's ask what are the, say, simplest or most common symmetry breaking orders we usually see. One example is this ferromagnet, where the unbroken symmetry consists of the original translation symmetry, meaning the translation symmetry is preserved, but the spin rotational, SO3 spin rotational symmetry is spontaneously broken to U1, and the picture is represented here. Each arrow here represents a spin one half moment. So you see the SO3 is broken to U1. This U1 is the spin rotation along this particular direction. This is one familiar example. Another familiar example is the valence bond solid, or VBS. Here, the SO3 spin rotational symmetry is preserved, but translation symmetry is spontaneously broken to its subgroup. I just call it translation squared. From this, this is a typical picture. Here, each ellipse is a spin singlet, and you see translation by one unit cell is broken to the translation by two unit cells. We notice there's a common feature between these symmetry breaking orders, that is, both of them can be represented by some product state. This one is literally a product state between different spins. This one is not a product state between different spins, but it's a product state between the singlets. But overall, all of these are product states of some local clusters. Because of this reason, they are relatively simpler to understand, and they are relatively more classical. So what is entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking order? Let's look at a particular example. Still the spin-1 half system on the lattice with SO3 and translation symmetry. But now, I tell you, in the broken symmetry state, the unbroken symmetry consists of the original lattice translation symmetry, and the SO3 symmetry is broken spontaneously to Zn. What I want to emphasize here is the unbroken symmetry, the unbroken spin rotational symmetry is now U1. I demand it to be Zn, where n can be any positive integer, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Now, I guess it's not very hard to convince yourself you are no longer able to draw a picture like before to represent such a state. In fact, you can show this kind of state just cannot be represented by any product state of any local cluster, no matter how you define the local cluster. So this is what we call entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking orders, meaning if I know this symmetry breaking pattern, I can necessarily show that this system will have some non-trivial pattern of quantum entanglement. And for this kind of state, you see it's intrinsically entangled and it's not easy to draw a picture to represent it. It also has many other interesting properties. For example, for this particular one, it will have two gapless Goldstone modes, one generically, one with linear dispersion, the other with quadratic dispersion. These states are studied in more details in this paper. In the same paper, we also constructed an infinite family of models with exactly solvable ground states, each of which exhibits the entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking orders, and they also have some other interesting properties. So I think this one is more complicated than the simplest symmetry breaking state, but it's still just some symmetry breaking state. And let's go to the even more complicated case. This is what we call non-Lagrangian quantum critical states. And to understand this concept, let's first review how we describe a quantum critical state in general. Usually, to describe its no-energy dynamics, we use some kind of effective field theories. So let's review the landscape of these effective field theories from the perspective of the renormalization group. Say we define the theory in some UV scale, and we flow to the IR scale under RG. There, usually the theories are of the previous three types. Either the theory is just weakly coupled all the way from UV to IR. A typical example is free fermion. Such theories are simpler to understand. Then the second class is where the theory is strongly coupled in the UV, but weakly coupled in the IR. A typical example is quantum electrodynamics with fermionic matter in 3+1 space-time dimensions. It's strongly coupled in the UV because of the Landau pole. This kind of theories is still relatively easy to understand if we just want to understand the low energy physics, because we don't have to go all the way up to the strongly coupled UV scale. We can just start from here, where the coupling is already relatively weak, and then go to lower energy. Then it's the more complicated type. These theories are weakly coupled in the UV, but strongly coupled in the IR, such as 2+1 dimensional Wilson-Fisher theory. Still, fortunately, with the techniques of the renormalization group, we are also able to access the no-energy physics of such theories. The common feature of these theories is that they can all be described by some so-called renormalizable UV Lagrangian, or in the language of quantum matter, they will have some mean field description in the sense that they can first be described by some non-interacting mean field. On top of the mean field, there are some fluctuations, but the fluctuations can be taken to be weak at some high energy scale, although at a low energy scale, it may become stronger and stronger. So what is a non-Lagrangian theory? A non-Lagrangian theory is supposed to be some RG fixed point without any description in terms of any renormalizable UV Lagrangian. One example that we proposed was this so-called stable liquid. Basically, what's happening here is that we find there's just no such Lagrangian that can match the symmetry and anomaly of such a theory. So such a theory is supposed to be strongly coupled all the way from UV to IR. And in the language of quantum matter, what this means is that the fluctuations on top of such theory will just be very strong across all the length scales. So it's not smoothly connected to any semi-classical mean field. In other words, we can view them as some ultra quantum matter. Okay, then you may wonder, why do we care about these things? They may be exotic, they may be more complicated, why do we care? So there are a few reasons. One reason is just the existence of these theories or universality classes forces us to expand our understanding of physics, understand the physics, so it enriches our understanding. And maybe more importantly, the existence of these theories forces us to develop some new theoretical tools to study them. Then these new theoretical tools can also be applied to study many other problems, and we may benefit from this. Also, practically, later I will argue that these states can also be realized in a lab, say in some materials. So how can they be realized in a lab? Then we need to ask this question, in which condensed matter system or natural system can we find these interesting emergent universality classes? Fortunately, this is possible because although, say, if we want to realize some non-Lagrangian theory, our physical universe doesn't realize it because we know the standard model of the particle physics is described by some renormalizable Lagrangian. But fortunately, condensed matter systems provide us with infinitely many artificial universes, such as this cuprate or twisted Bailey graphene or many quantum simulators and many other things. One big advantage of these artificial universes is their tunability. That is, we can experimentally tune the parameters of these artificial universes. Then the emergent universality class in one of these systems may go from one type to another, and it may realize your favorite theory. Your favorite theory may be some topological phase. It may be some in particular, say, entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking order or non-Lagrangian theory. But it's possible that they can emerge. So now the question. Now I want to introduce this question, this relevant question, the emergibility problem. This question is designed to ask the previous one. So the setup is this. Suppose I have the universal properties of my universality class. Suppose I also know the property of my lattice system. I ask, by tuning the parameters of my lattice system, whether it's possible or not for this universality class to emerge at no energy for this lattice system. You see, because this question is about ability to emerge, that's why it's called emergibility problem. To demonstrate the meaning of this question, I want to use this example. Suppose let me take the universality class to be a 2+1 dimensional Wilson-Fisher conformal field theory. It can be described by this effective Lagrangian, where n is a 3-component vector. And for the lattice system, I want to consider a very common condensed matter system, say just a square lattice spin 1/2 system, and I want it to have order symmetries. So this is a cartoon of my system. There's a square lattice. At each vertex of the square lattice, I have a spin 1/2 moment. They interact through such a Hamiltonian. I want to emphasize, this Hamiltonian is really just one example of the Hamiltonian. There's a dot, dot, dot here. This dot, dot, dot really represents any local interactions respecting the symmetries. By symmetries here, I mean SO3 spin rotational symmetries and the lattice symmetries of the square lattice. So no matter how complicated this Hamiltonian looks, and no matter how strongly interacting the Hamiltonian is, as long as it's a local Hamiltonian respecting all these symmetries, it's a valid choice of Hamiltonian. So I really have infinitely many choices of the Hamiltonian. Now the emergibility question is asking, among all these infinitely many choices of the Hamiltonian, whether at least one of them can have the low energy physics being described by this O3 Wilson Fisher CFT with this Lagrangian. Okay, now it's your turn to tell me what you think. If you think it is emergible, please raise your right hand. If you don't think it's emergible, please raise your left hand. If you are not sure, then don't raise any hand. Okay, different people just expressed different opinions. So I think, and many people were not sure. I think this is a very non-trivial question. Indeed, this is a non-trivial question. The answer is no. So among all these infinitely many choices of the Hamiltonians, none of them can have the no-energy physics being described by precisely this kind of Lagrangian. I guess this answer may seem a bit surprising at the beginning because first, I have so many choices of the Hamiltonian. Second, even this particular one already looks pretty similar to this Lagrangian. Because S has three components, N has three components, they look very similar. Maybe it's natural, it's really natural to expect at least one Hamiltonian will exhibit this physics. But the answer is no, none of them can. I will explain the reason later. For now, I want to make a remark. That is, in the previous slide, when I described the microscopic properties of my relative system, I only described its robust properties, many properties that cannot be easily changed. So the robust properties include the symmetries. I said there's SO3 spin rotational symmetry and the lattice symmetries of the square lattice. And then I also specified the representation of my degrees of freedom. I said there was spin 1 half moments, now spin 1, spin 2. In the presence of SO3 spin rotational symmetry, different representations are sharply distinct. I can't change one into the other. Furthermore, actually, the locations of the degrees of freedom are also somehow robust, because if you try to move the locations of these moments, you will actually break the lattice symmetry. So these are the robust properties. I didn't specify any of these detailed properties. For example, I didn't say the Hamiltonian must be of some form. I didn't say it must be some Heisenberg Hamiltonian. I didn't say it must be some commuting projector Hamiltonian, and so on. I also didn't specify the magnitude and the range of the interaction. I didn't say the Hamiltonian must be up to nearest neighbor, or next nearest neighbor, or next nearest neighbor. I didn't specify any of these details. The reason I didn't specify any of these details is really because I want to take advantage of the tunability of my artificial universes. When I tune the parameters of the artificial universe, these details will just change. So it doesn't make sense to fix these details. In other words, to be experimentally relevant, when we ask this kind of immutability question, it makes more sense to only specify the robust properties, not the detailed properties. Okay, then again, we want to ask, why do we care about this immutability problem? There are also a few reasons. First, this is a conceptually very fundamental question. It concerns the landscape of all possible universality class in the quantum matter, so it's some fundamental property of a quantum matter. We had better understand it. Second, it turns out to also be practically useful because understanding the immutability problem turns out to be able to provide us with some guiding principle for us to realize some particular universality class in some quantum matter. The particular universality class may be a topological phase, may be quantum criticality, and so on. So how do we answer this question? Of course, the most straightforward way to answer this question is just to go ahead and solve all possible lattice Hamiltonians and identify the universality class. This is clearly not a practical method, and we will not do it. Another method is to carry out some explicit construction of the universality class or the effective field theory. Say we construct some Hamiltonian wave function and show this corresponds to or desired universality class. This is actually a pretty good approach, and I also use it open myself. However, I also know this approach is often done in a case-by-case manner. It's not very systematic, and in many cases, it's not controlled. Furthermore, for some complicated theories, such as the non-Lagrangian theories I mentioned before, remember, these are some ultra-quantum matter beyond any semi-classical or mean field description, there's simply no known explicit construction of them at the lattice scale. So this method doesn't work for that case. Then what we want to do is to develop some intrinsic characterization of the immutability property. By this I mean, I want to have a systematic framework whose input is just the robust properties of my lattice system, and output would be whether this universality class is immutable or not. Because I'm really taking the minimal input. That's why the title of the talk is a minimalist approach to the physics of emergence. Okay, so how can we read off any information about emergibility from these robust properties? They are the symmetries, representations, and the locations of the degrees of freedom. It turns out that the key is to notice these robust properties are all compactly encoded in the anomaly of my relative systems. And to understand this, let's just spend one page to review the concept of anomaly. So in this talk by anomaly, I mean to Hooft anomaly. It has been extensively studied in the context of quantum field theory. It means by quantum field theory, it may have some symmetries. It's fine on its own. But if we try to couple the quantum field theory to the gauge field corresponding to those symmetries, I will run into some inconsistency. This is some intrinsic property of the quantum field theory. It's just as intrinsic as, say, the scaling dimensions, those things. And maybe a familiar example in the context of quantum matter is the anomaly associated with U1 cross U1 symmetry in well fermions or in well semi-metal. But notice this is the anomaly of quantum field theory. In the previous page, I was saying the robust properties of a lattice system are encoded in the anomaly of a lattice system. A lattice system usually has symmetries like lattice translation, maybe lattice rotation, and also some internal symmetries. Then what do we mean by anomalies of them? Well, essentially, they mean basically the same thing. If I have a lattice system, when we say it has an anomaly, we again mean when the lattice system is coupled to some gauge field corresponding to the symmetry, we will run into some inconsistency. Again, the anomaly is some intrinsic property of the lattice system. It's something that's shared, but is shared by all the universality classes that can emerge in this lattice system. Because of this reason, anomaly is something super universal. It's shared by all the universality classes that can emerge. So in case you are unfamiliar with this notion, let's look at an example. This is an example of anomaly associated with lattice translation symmetry and SO3 spin rotational symmetry. Again, let's take the example of a square lattice spin 1/2 system. Let's put it on, say, torus, meaning periodic boundary conditions. So everything's good. Now, if I try to couple the system to the gauge field, say, corresponding to lattice translation, what this means is that now I should be able to insert gauge flux corresponding to translation, which means I can now change the system size, say, from this smaller torus to this bigger torus. And you see what happens is now the total spin of the system will change by some half integer amount. But my symmetry is really SO3. So if I change it by half integer amount, that's not good. It means I'm no longer able to couple the system to the SO3 gauge field. So this is the manifestation of the anomaly. If I try to couple the system to the gauge fields corresponding to both symmetries, I will run into some inconsistency. OK, so this is an example of anomaly. Now, from this perspective of anomaly and anomaly matching, the immergibility problem can be phrased in the following way. Suppose we have some many-body system, some lattice system, such that some universality class. Do you have a question? It's called just Z. To the D, if D is the space dimension. Other questions? OK, so from this perspective, suppose we have some lattice system such that some universality class can emerge. And suppose the lattice system has an anomaly characterized by little omega, and the universality class has an anomaly characterized by capital omega. I will not explain what the precise structure of little omega and capital omega. They were discussed in various papers. In fact, one of the main contributions of the second paper here is to clarify the structure of little omega for a large class of lattice systems. And the theme of the third paper is to figure out the structure of capital omega for 2+1D topological orders, topological quantum spin liquids. So suppose we have these anomalies. Then in order for this universality class to emerge, this anomaly matching condition must hold. Because anomalies, as I said before, anomaly is something super universal. It should be shared by all emergible universality classes. Here we're actually making a stronger assumption. That is, as long as this anomaly matching condition can hold, then it can emerge. This is a hypothesis. It hasn't been rigorously proved, but there's also no counterexample. We think it may just be true and we will use it. By the way, I should mention, this is a very short equation, omega equal to omega. This symbol omega, this symbol capital omega, are both complicated. They have delicate structures. Also, this equal sign is complicated. I didn't explain in what sense this equal sign is taking, but they will explain in these papers. Okay, for now, I will just, I will not go any further detail of this framework. So what we have here is a framework, a systematic framework that can, that allows us to answer the immutability problem. Now I will just show you some applications. So the zeroth application is to take the many-body system to be square lattice spin Wolf system and take the universality class to be O3 Wilson Fisher CFT. And then it turns out after some analysis, you will see the little omega is not zero, but capital omega is zero, so they are not equal. According to the previous framework, this means the O3 Wilson Fisher CFT cannot emerge in square lattice spin Wolf system. This was the question I asked before. Now I'm explaining the reason is because anomalies don't match. But this is a simple, very simple application. Maybe you know this before. Let's look at a more non-trivial application. I like this result quite a lot, although it's very it still sounds very simple. Let's consider the so-called deconfined quantum critical point. So we know that on a square lattice, it's possible to have this near anti-ferromagnetic order. It's also possible to have this valence bond solid order. These two different orders spontaneously break different symmetries. This one breaks spin rotation, this one breaks lattice rotation. So according to the standard Landau-Ginzburg paradigm, a continuous transition between these two should require some fine-tuning. But people realized that maybe it doesn't require any fine-tuning. And this kind of possible transition is called deconfined phase transition or deconfined quantum critical point, represented by this blue dot. So what I was saying is just people previously proposed that there is a theory called blue dot. It can emerge as a transition between these two phases. Now let me ask this question. Can the theory blue dot, you don't need to know any detail about this blue dot, it's just a theory. Can this blue dot emerge as a transition between another pair of phases, say ferromagnetic state and VBS or any other things? It turns out, because now we really have a systematic framework, we can answer all these questions. It turns out for square lattice spin Wolf system, it's not possible. In other words, in a square lattice spin Wolf system, suppose I know this blue dot emerges, then we necessarily know that the vicinity of the phase diagram looks like this. In one side, there's the near state, the other side, there's a VBS. I think this is remarkable. There's only one way for this blue dot to emerge, and people have found it. However, we can also look at other systems, like honeycomb lattice spin Wolf system. In the past, the people already knew on honeycomb lattice spin Wolf system, blue dot can emerge as the transition between near state and the VBS. And what we found is that it can also emerge between, say, ferromagnetic state and the VBS. So this is previously unknown. Another remark I want to make about this application is that you see here, using our framework, we can not only answer whether this is emergible, we can also answer some questions about the structure of the phase diagram. We can pin down the symmetry breaking patterns adjacent to these critical states. This is very useful in practice because experimentally and numerically, it's often relatively easier to identify these symmetry breaking orders. So if one of these particular symmetry breaking orders just emerges in some particular lattice model or experimental material, then we can just look for the vicinity of these symmetry breaking states in the phase diagram, and we may end up with the more interesting critical state. So it's also practically useful. Yeah. Yeah, let's ignore that subtlety. I think the belief is the more and more people are believing is weakly first order. But here the statement is saying, so it being weakly first order means the effective field theory doesn't yield a continuous phase transition. Here, the statement is saying the effective field theory emerges in this way. There's no contradiction between what I said. Mm-hmm. Okay, as the second application, let's consider a particular quantum spin liquid that people have studied for many years. This is the so-called U1 Dirac spin liquid. It was initially proposed for the purpose of understanding qubits, but people are also interested in it for its own reason. So the effective theory of this theory of the spin liquid consists of an emergent U1 gauge field A coupled to four flavors of Dirac fermions. So in the past, this state has been studied for many years. In the past studies, I think there have been some beliefs. One of the beliefs is that the Dirac spin liquid, it can be stable on triangular lattice or Kagami lattice spin 1/2 system, but cannot be stable on honeycomb or square lattice spin 1/2 system. And using our approach, what we found is that they can actually also be stable on honeycomb and the square lattice spin 1/2 system. Sorry? Very assume what? I'm assuming spin rotational symmetry. So here, when we say, so in all these lattice systems, I'm assuming spin rotational symmetry, time reversal symmetry, and also the lattice symmetries. There's another belief that is, as a quantum spin liquid, it's natural, if we go to textbooks or reviews, it's natural that these spin liquids can be described by some of the so-called Parton construction, which are essentially some weakly coupled lattice gauge theories. Our result is that actually even this Dirac spin liquid, which is maybe one of the most studied spin liquids, gapless spin liquids, they can actually go beyond the Parton construction. Meaning there is a way to realize the Dirac spin liquid physically, but this way cannot be theoretically described by some Parton construction. The precise sense of this statement is in the paper, and I would encourage you to take a look. This is very similar to the case of the standard model for particle physics, where it is also supposed to be realizable on a lattice, but it cannot be realized in a weakly coupled lattice system. Then there's the next application is we can ask in which lattice systems can the I mentioned that there's some non-Lagrangian theory. These are some ultra quantum matter beyond any semi-classical mean field. We can ask whether they can emerge. And we found, yeah, they can. We actually found many realizations. Here we are depicting two of them. Say, this is the name of the non-Lagrangian state. It may emerge in this this triangular lattice spin 1/2 system or Kagami lattice spin 1/2 system. And we can pin down the precise symmetry breaking orders of the nearby states. In fact, these two particular magnetic orders have been reported in some numerical studies. So if one starts from those numerical models and add some perturbation to explore the phase diagram, one may end up with a more interesting quantum critical state. I also want to mention, so actually, we have found many realizations. For a lot of them, the nearby symmetry breaking states are entanglement enabled. They cannot be represented by any classical picture. So we start looking for some non-Lagrangian theory. We also end up finding some entanglement enabled symmetry breaking orders. So. It's a quantum critical, it's supposed to be a 2+1 dimensional conformal field theory that cannot be described by any renormalizable Lagrangian. We know its emergent symmetry, we know its anomaly, we know a little bit about its dynamics. You can know more, you can ask for more details.
So how do you know it's stable?
Yeah, we need to assume something about their dynamics based on some arguments. by dynamics, I mean scaling dimensions of the operators.
Assuming that that kind of fixed point exists.
There are arguments to show the fixed point should exist based on some larger analysis. And based on the same analysis, maybe also combined with some bootstrap result, there's evidence that our assumptions for their dynamics may be reasonable. Other questions? OK, so all these results are actually summarized in these two big tables. I will not explain the meaning of these tables. Basically, here we can do a systematic classification of all possible ways in which these theories can emerge. We have reproduced all the known realizations of the deconfined quantum critical point and Dirac spin liquid, and uncovered many unknown ones. And we also found many realizations of the non-Lagrangian stable liquid. I want to summarize here. So I introduced this concept of entanglement-enabled symmetry breaking orders. These are some intrinsically quantum symmetry breaking orders. We can't have as classical picture as the ferromagnet. And we also discussed this non-Lagrangian theory. So these are theories that are strongly coupled all the way from UV to IR, was strongly fluctuating at all length scales. And we have evidence that they can emerge in some realistic systems. And we know the structure of the phase diagram. And I guess most importantly, we have this systematic framework to answer the question of emergibility. So if we want to ask whether some particular universality class can emerge in a system, then we just need to know the anomaly of the native system, anomaly of the universality class, then we ask whether this equation holds. It should really be a pullback, but I didn't remember to remove this sign. It's the same equation. For the sake of presentation previously, I didn't have this sign. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. Thank you.
So we have time for questions.
Thank you, great talk. So why can't we realize the O3 Wilson-Fisher fixed point in the Heisenberg square lattice?
Because the anomalies don't match.
Could you go more into that, I guess, is my what I would like. Can you go into that, like give a quick summary of why that can't occur?
Yeah, maybe the simpler way to understand is to notice on the square lattice spin one-half system, there's the so-called Lipschitz-Matisse constraint, such that no trivial gapped ground state can emerge. Now, suppose O3 Wilson Fisher can emerge, then you can imagine, you know that the Wilson Fisher is connected to the totally disordered phase. Then you can imagine that one can also emerge, but we know that it cannot emerge, so the CFT can also not emerge.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question?
So you mentioned the FM to VBS DQCP on Honeycomb lattice. I wonder if there is any concrete lattice model that realizes it?
I don't know any, but there's a pattern construction of it. I want to mention, we found many realizations. Many of them, we didn't know the pattern constructions of most of them, but for that particular one, we did find pattern construction. For the others, for some of them, we can prove the pattern construction doesn't exist. And for most of them, we didn't try to find any pattern construction.
Simple question. So is this correspondence always one-to-one? Say, imagine that you have some UV anomaly and IR anomaly. They match. So does it mean that this UV theory and IR theory are necessarily connected?
There's no rigorous proof of this. It's just a belief that we are using.
Right.
There's also no counterexample of that.
There's no counterexample?
No.
But there's no proof?
There's no proof.
Okay, so my question is, how do you know the anomaly without knowing the Hamiltonian? Are you saying the shape of the lattice and the symmetric group and the degrees of freedom can just determine the anomaly completely?
Which anomaly? This one or this one?
The microscopic one, because you are considering all the possible Hamiltonians, but if you don't know exactly which Hamiltonian, how do you know which anomaly?
Right. So anomaly is not a statement about some particular Hamiltonian. I can choose a simple Hamiltonian to consider. Then if I can extract the anomaly from that simple Hamiltonian, I know the anomaly. That's basically the approach. More specifically, it's related to the picture of the so-called lattice homotopy. I guess maybe the another simple way to see it is to just consider where the case where the internal symmetry is SO3, and we have some lattice symmetry. Then one can study the properties of the SO3 monopoles. It turns out all these anomalies, all results of lattice homotopy are encoded there. And then starting from that, you can understand a lot of things.
Okay, thanks.
Any other question?
Yeah, just to come back about the confined criticality, you were saying that you could not find a Hamiltonian in the square lattice, but you could find it in the honeycomb. Did I get correctly? I think it was asked. Which was the Hamiltonian in the honeycomb that shows it?
I think the previous question was asking about, so I mentioned in the past, people knew the deconfined quantum criticality can be a transition between nil state and the VBS state on honeycomb. I also mentioned we found the same theory can also be the transition between ferromagnet and the VBS state. And the previous question was asking whether we know a Hamiltonian for the second transition. I think for the first transition in the literature, there has been studies. For the second transition, we don't have a particular lattice Hamiltonian, but we have pattern constructions.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? No, thank you again.
Thanks.